Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. This is week 4 of the April 2024 Model Railroader magazine. Today we will be reading the following articles: Small Scale and Big Sky Country, and The Norfolk and Western in Appalachia. Small Scale and Big Sky Country. The Great Northern Kalispell Division encompasses vast vistas of Montana and Enscale. By Doug Diedrich, photos by Lou Sassy. My model railroading story is familiar for the most part. Like many in this hobby, I received my first train set when I was a youngster, but it wasn't your typical O or HO scale train set. This was a relatively new scale called N. Although the train didn't run all that well, I enjoyed setting it up and letting my imagination run free. I discovered all the model train magazines and dreamed of one day creating my own miniature world. Life moved on and my priorities changed. It wasn't until I had my own family and 3 young sons that I returned to model trains. At first, I set up the old trains and ran them around the track. Then I bought some new equipment and built a small layout for the boys. But it was when I joined the Albany N Track Club that things really changed for me. I became friends with club member John Valakovic, who also belonged to the Hudson Berkshire Division of the National Model Railroad Association. John invited me to several meetings where I would meet fellow members such as Bob Hamm, Bill McChesney, and Dick Elwell, to name a few. I would also get the pleasure of seeing their great layouts and the amazing work that they were doing. I became friends with them and many others who have inspired me in so many ways. The prototype. My Great Northern Kalispell Division was born out of 2 loves, fly fishing and model trains. While I was exploring the possibilities of building a home layout, I took a fly fishing trip to Montana and fell in love with that part of the country. I just needed a railroad. But which railroad? The area was home to the Northern Pacific, Milwaukee Road, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, and Great Northern, among others. The Northern Pacific and Great Northern were the 2 I would focus on and research. I read the history of James Hill, his Continental Railway, and Hill's search for a northern route over the Rockies. That classic green and orange paint scheme and the drama of the famous Maria's Pass made GN an easy choice. I never planned on modeling after the prototype, but I decided I wanted to recreate the section from Whitefish, Montana, along the southern border of Glacier National Park, to Shelby, Montana, in the late 1950s. Whitefish Yard, which was the division point until 1955, had an icing facility and stockyard. This section of the railroad would also include Columbia Falls and the large lumber mill there, Belton, the west entrance to Glacier National Park, Essex, where there was a ballast mine, Helper Service over Maria's Pass to Summit, East Glacier, the east entrance to Glacier National Park, and Glacier Park Lodge. At Shelby sits another large yard, where trains from the east and the south would meet. Shelby also served a number of grain elevators. The branch line to Kalispell, where there was a small yard, would also be included. I would run the GN's named passenger and freight trains, such as the Empire Builder, Western Star, the West Coaster, Twin City, and Fruit Forwarding. Amtrak's revived Empire Builder still runs from Chicago to Seattle today. Building the layout. Construction started with preparing the basement with finished walls and a drop ceiling. Lighting was installed and I used trim coil, a rolled aluminum sheet available from hardware stores and home centers, to cover my corners. I wanted the benchwork to be removable in case we decided to move someday. For this, I constructed rectangular boxes of various sizes, framed with 1x4 lumber and filled with 2-inch foam board. I placed them on top of wall-mounted brackets and bolted them together. In some locations, I used plywood on risers to create the subroad bed. The peninsula was made using L-girder construction bolted to 2x2 legs. Stringers with risers were installed to support the quarter-inch plywood subroad bed. I painted the walls in 3 shades of blue, starting with dark blue at the top, medium in the middle, and light blue on the bottom. I blended the colors together as I moved along. The clouds were added freehand using an airbrush. For my backdrops, I used photos I took while I attended the Great Northern Railway Historical Society, or GNRHS, conventions at Kalispell and Glacier Park in 2006 and 2010. The exception is the one at Whitefish, which I hand-painted. The peninsula has a freestanding backdrop made from trimmed coil mounted to a wooden frame using hook-and-loop fasteners. I used the same method for creating my valance. Track and train control. The track is mostly Atlas Code 55, except for Whitefish Yard, Code 80, and Columbia Falls, PICO Code 55. When I was laying track at those locations, Atlas Code 55 wasn't yet available, but once I came out, I used nothing else. Turnouts are lined using Caboose Industries ground throws, homemade slide switches, and Tortoise by Circuitron switch motors. Turnouts on the main are controlled tortoises operated by panels on the fascia. I use an NCE wireless 5-amp system and a 5-amp booster to run trains. The layout has a number of power districts and auto-reversers from Tony's Train Exchange. Scenery. I regard scenery as a three-dimensional art form, and it's my favorite part of the hobby. I really enjoy recreating in miniature what I see in the natural world. Scenery is about different textures and colors and trying to match what we see in real life. With so many new scenery products on the market, there are plenty to choose from. I've learned many of my scenery techniques from model railroaders such as Bob Hamm and Dick Elwell. I start with foam board and carve out the contours, then cover it with a mixture of sheetrock powder, water, and foam shavings. I then paint it brown and add some sand, dirt, and fine ground foam while the paint is still wet. Once that's dry, I add static grasses of different lengths and colors. I then add small pieces of polyfiber laid over the grass and sprinkled with ground foam to create bushes. The rocks are made using plaster rock molds, both commercial and homemade. I use washes to stain the rocks, starting with dark colors in the cracks, and dry brush the edges with light gray and/or white to bring out the highlights. My layout has lots of trees. Some of my conifers were handmade using the bottle brush method, but with so many needed, I decided to use modified commercially made trees. I modify them by reshaping and spraying them various colors. Very few are used right out of the box. There are more than 2,000 conifers on the layout. Most of my deciduous trees are handmade using a dry flower known as pepperweed. I first spray paint them light green. Then I hand paint the stems and branches white. I wrap the bases in small bundles with floral tape and paint that white. Using a small brush, I mark up the trunk and branches with black paint to represent aspens and birch trees. I can't tell you how many I've made, but there are a lot. I also have some Scenic Express super trees flocked with Nock fine leaf material. Envirotex Light, a two-part epoxy, is used to create the water. I prepare the bottom of riverbed by painting it a certain color depending on the look I'm trying to capture. Because of the silt from the spring glacier runoff, some of the rivers appear light blue or green. Rocks and gravel are glued down along the edges or in the stream bed itself. I then pour the epoxy into the stream or lake. I may have to do this more than once, depending on how much is needed. I keep layers thin so it will cure correctly. To give the stream's texture, I add a polyfiber used for fish tank fillers and lay it in the epoxy, creating rapids and ripples. The waterfalls are created much in the same way, but I use a heavier fiber pad pulled apart and artist gel medium to hold it down. Once that's dry, I pour epoxy above and below the waterfall. The last step is to highlight the moving water with white paint and along some of the edges in the direction of the flow. There are a couple of special effects I've added to the layout, such as the sound of a running stream and bird sound clips which run continuously. Lightning and thunder, which are triggered by an infrared detector going up the Kalispell branch, and nighttime lighting effects. Structures. Because I'm modeling a prototype, there are some iconic structures I just had to have on the layout. This includes Whitefish Station, Belton Station, the Isaac Walton Inn, Summit, Glacier Park Station, Sheep Creek Bridge, and Two Medicine River Bridge. Because there are no kits currently available for these buildings, I have to scratch build them. To date, I've completed Whitefish Station and Glacier Park Station. The Great Northern Railway Historical Society, of which I've been a member for many years, provided me with scale drawings of these iconic structures to work from. I have also taken photos of the prototypes during my several visits. For me, Whitefish Station is the crown jewel of the layout because of its Tudor architectural style, plus the fact that it was my first attempt at scratch building. I enjoy scratch building and have built other structures on the layout, including snow sheds. The snow sheds were a fun project, and it's one of my favorite scenes. Other structures are laser-cut wood kits from American Model Builders, Bar Mills, GC Laser, and others. There are also some plastic kits from Design Preservation Models, now owned by Woodland Scenics and William K. Walthers Incorporated. The two bridges, well, actually three, since Sheep Creek Bridge is two bridges side by side, are micro-engineering tall steel viaduct kits. When building the Two Medicine River Bridge, I added a few details and kit-bashed the center span to match the prototype. There are a few structures that are still waiting to be scratch-built, such as Belton Station. For now, I use stand-in buildings until I'm able to complete them. Locomotives and rolling stock. The locomotives on my layout are a mixture of diesels from the 1950s, both with and without sound. There are three Broadway Limited Imports steam engines, all with sound, that I run as extras or VIP trains. This isn't prototypical, but I love having some steam engines on the layout. Most of the freight rolling stock is Micro Trains and Atlas, with a few other manufacturers thrown in for good measure. I changed out the wheel sets from the large flanges to the small flanges in order to ride on the Code 55 track. Weight was added and couplers replaced as needed. Passenger cars are a mix of Intermountain Railway Company, Cato, Rapido, and Walthers. Operation. Operation is what brings the layout to life and gives it purpose. There have been many articles written on the subject, and I suggest doing a little homework if you're planning on building a layout with this in mind. I also recommend operating on as many layouts as you can to see what you like or don't like. There has never been a layout that I haven't learned something from. I belong to an operating group that meets once a week, taking turns hosting. We all enjoy doing this throughout the year. I started out using switch lists, but have moved to a card system. This is a work in progress, but I feel I'm moving in the right direction. Currently, I have two locals, or turns, the Columbia Falls Turn, which works Plum Creek Lumber Mill and the local industries, and the Kalispell Turn, which works all of Kalispell. There's also the Gravel Extra and the Coal Extra. Though there were actually never any coal operations in the area, I'm using my modeling license. There are several through freights. Any eastbounds over 10 cars need helper service from Essex to make it up the grade to Summit. Whitefish Yard needs two operators, one on the east end and one on the west. I run two passenger trains per session, which may drop or pick up cars at Belton. This was done for passengers traveling to Glacier National Park during the summer season, and you could see sleeper cars from all sorts of railroads parked at Belton. The future. The Great Northern Kalispell Division has a little something for everyone. Modeling trains has become a great pastime for me. I've met so many wonderful people associated with the hobby and have made so many friends. There's still a lot to be done, and I hope to complete several more projects, including the East Staging Yard, in the near future. This will open up even more possibilities for operation. My closing thought is this. It isn't always about the trains, but the people you meet along the way. Meet Doug Dieterich. Doug Dieterich lives with Nadine, his wife of more than 41 years, near Albany, New York. They have three loving adult sons and are proud of each of them. Doug enjoys the local model railroading community and is vice president of the National Model Railroad Association's Berkshire Division. He loves the outdoors, traveling, and fly fishing. The Norfolk and Western in Appalachia. The 36 by 36 foot N-scale Pocahontas Division is set in southern West Virginia. By Mike Farrow, photos by Lou Sassy. Inspiration for model railroads can come from a variety of places. Whitewater rafting trips and vacations to southern West Virginia led me to model the Norfolk and Western Pocahontas Division in N-scale. The 36 by 36 foot model railroad is set during the 1970s and early 1980s, when six-axle electromotive division, or EMD, and General Electric, or GE, diesels were the primary road power on this part of the system. I was taken by the beautiful landscape of Appalachia and hoped that I could recreate what I saw in N-scale. Trips to the large coal marshaling yards in Bluefield, West Virginia, further cemented my decision to model this part of the N&W. A lifelong hobby. I like to think I come from a model railroading family. My father was a model railroader, and we always had a train around the Christmas tree. My grandfather would frequently take us rail fanning at New York Central's Collinwood Yard in Cleveland. I also had uncles and cousins who were into Lionel trains. During the 45 years since then, I've built three layouts, all relatively complete. My second was based on Model Railroaders N-scale Burlington Northern Project layout, which was featured over several issues in 1990. My version of the layout was sectional, which enabled me to incorporate parts of it into the Pocahontas division. We moved into our new home in mid-2002. I'm a custom home builder, so I built the basement with high ceilings and fewer posts. With my busy schedule, the room preparation took 2 years. I used recessed lighting over points of interest, concealing it with a tempered hardboard valance. I also built a storage closet, an observation deck, and a staging room. Scenery and track. I focused on building the infrastructure true to the areas I visited on my rafting trips, even collecting dirt, rock, and twigs during visits. Careful observation of the area's topography helped me produce better scenes. The landforms are layers of extruded foam insulation board, secured with white glue and occasionally some 8D comma nails. I shaped the contours with a steak knife, smoothed the foam with sandpaper, and filled in any gaps between layers with Sculptamold. Then I applied a coat of flat, tan, latex paint in preparation for the scenery. I made the rock outcroppings from ceiling tiles, along with plaster castings poured in rubber molds. These formed the walls of the mountains. Blending the base colors with the real rocks that I collected in West Virginia helped add to the scenery's realism. In addition to natural materials, I used a variety of ground foam, static grass, and static grass mats to scenic the layout. Polyfiber and foliage mats were useful when modeling vines and trees. Speaking of trees, there are approximately 10,000 on the layout. Those in the background are puffballs. Foreground trees include those made with wire armatures, woodland scenic tree kits, and basically anything else that looked like an N-scale tree. I used paint and Mod Podge for most of the water features. I painted the backdrop scenes directly on the drywall. The sectional parts of my previous layout, which I incorporated into this model railroad, had Atlas Code 80, Flex Track, and Pico turnouts. All of my new work includes the same. I positioned the turnouts close to the edge of the layout so I can operate them manually. Towns and structures. In 2018, I expanded the layout so I could extend the main line and add the city of Welch, West Virginia. Given the size and scale of the model railroad, I included two mid-sized cities, Bluefield and Welch, a pair of small towns, Eugene and Coppers, and a variety of industries, such as a steel mill, a paper mill, a log loadout, and a wood chip plant. There are two major coal mining operations on the layout. There are others in various conditions, including an abandoned mine near the Southern Railway, interchange, and small dump locations. I built more than 300 structures for the Pocahontas Division. I enjoy kit bashing and scratch building to create unique structures. All of the buildings are painted and weathered, but details are saved for the exposed sides. Many of the kits are used several times, featuring the backs of some and fronts of others, depending on locations. Coal country with a twist. The N&W during the 1970s and 80s meant coal. An army of hoppers would haul black diamonds from the coal fields east to Norfolk, Virginia. On my version of the Pocahontas Division, I've put a greater emphasis on manifest freights traveling to various markets. Following the N&W's lead, my diesel fleet consists of locomotives from the 1960s through the 1980s. second-generation EMD Jeeps, SDs, and some GE units, many with high short hoods, are commonly seen. About 20% of my diesel fleet is decorated for Southern Railway, hinting at the upcoming merger. The two roads merged in 1982 to form the contemporary Norfolk Southern Railway. Several of my diesels have sound. However, I still prefer the quiet, relaxing environment of the train room as is. I recently converted to digital command control using an NCE system with four cabs, two each radio and tethered. A couple of friends from my N-Track club assisted with the setup. I equipped the diesels with TCS decoders. The majority of the rolling stock is correct for the layout's era, but I have a few pieces that I like from outside that time frame. The cars are weathered with acrylic paints and shocks, weighted, and equipped with metal wheels. Most of the traffic on the Pocahontas division is unit trains and manifest trains, with a few locals thrown in to mix things up. An occasional passenger train can also be found on the line. More to do. I don't follow a formal operating scheme. I enjoy running multiple long trains through the beautiful mountains of West Virginia. On occasion, I have between 6 and 8 folks over to run trains and socialize. I've hosted many open houses for local groups and the National Model Railroad Association. It was a great experience to meet so many friendly, gracious people from around the world during the NMRA National Convention that was held in downtown Cleveland back in 2014. Although my N-scale Norfolk and Western Pocahontas division layout is still evolving, I believe it has met my personal goals. The 36-by-36-foot model railroad still serves as a great form of creativity and relaxation. The first sidebar of the article is titled Mountain Washes. Appalachian Mount scenery calls for many trees. Modeling the density of these forests can be very costly. There are several ways to reduce the number of trees, including narrower benchwork with a detailed backdrop, more exposed rockwork, and my favorite, mountain washes. Mountain washes are V-shaped areas where rain and snow melt and water drains in temporary streams. The fast-moving water can cleanse these areas, prohibiting large trees from growing. A wash can be filled with loose rock and smaller foliage to create a detailed scene all of its own. I built mine by first placing larger chips of rock on the mountainside, followed by progressively smaller rocks to create the water path. Then I added foliage, starting with smaller pieces and building up to larger clumps. Mountain washes can also break up the monotone green canvas of a wooded scene. Younger trees and bushes can be modeled in various shades of green. Flowers and vines provide opportunities to add shades of red, yellow, white, and purple, depending on the season. The second sidebar is titled Convincing Conveyors. When modeling various industries, I found that the number of realistic conveyor systems available commercially is limited. That led me to come up with a simple and inexpensive, quote, scratch bashing project that let me recreate open and covered conveyor systems. I started with truss bridge parts package from Central Valley Model Works. The smallest size was best for N-scale. Other sizes are available. Other key parts included various styrene shapes and drinking straws. The image above shows how I stacked the styrene to support the conveyor belt covers. The stacked styrene can also be used to create longer conveyors by overlapping sections. I cut the straws lengthwise in roughly 12 scale foot sections to model the covers. Following prototype practice, I overlapped the pieces. This is done on full-size conveyors to shed rainwater. I painted the supports a weathered black color. The covers were painted to match the industrial complex. Meet Mike Farrow. Mike Farrow is a custom home builder from Hiram, Ohio. He and his wife, Dee, enjoy the outdoors and historical architecture. Facebook users may recognize Mike's work under his moniker, Zeke McGee. In his spare time, Mike enjoys rail fanning, fishing, and exploring old towns. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader Magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening.